MMH, the home of rock radio.
You're listening to Pure Rock Fury with me, Paul Cash, on MMH, the home of rock radio. My very special guest on today's show is one of my favourite drummers. In my humble opinion, he's one of the most underrated ones too. Together with The Voice, Steve Overland and the awesome Merv Goldsworthy, he's been the backbone of FM since 1984. Way back in the day, my 21st birthday cake had the FM logo on the top. When I drummed myself, I chose Premier drums and pace cymbals because this man played them. And I have a signed picture of this man on my office wall that's been up since 1989.
Oh, bro, was it covering something up? Stain or something.
And I still have the pace drumstick Penny gave me after signing a few picks back in backstage in Manchester.
I'll have you back.
And he's looking a bit worried now, like I'm a crazed stalker or something, but I can assure him I'm not. I am totally thrilled and honoured now to be talking to the one and only Pete Jupp of FM. Pete, how are you, sir?
I'm good. How are you? All right?
I'm very good, thank you. So, the burning question, I suppose, after all these years that's on everyone's lips. How did you manage to get on the Peter Kay live video?
Oh, I don't really know. Well, we were just in the audience, and we were sat, I was sat behind Dawn French, and I think they kept going to Dawn French, and I don't know.
I must admit, when I saw it, they kept panning in on Dawn French all the time, and it panned to you guys, and I thought, that's Pete Jupp. That's Pete Jupp. I was more interested in you being there than I was with Dawn French. But anyway, the new album, Tough It Out Live, came out on the 9th of April. How's it been received?
Yeah, I mean, we've been staggered by the reviews. It's been really well received. You know, the tour was great. And it was just a shame. It's a short, really.
Yeah.
You know, it would have been great to have done more dates. When the idea was put forward with Gunn and Dan Reed Network, it was like a no-brainer to me anyway, you know. Mm-hmm. And the guys were brilliant to work with, because the funny thing was, when we were recording Tough It Out, Neil Kernan was the producer, and he had a DAT tape, if you remember that.
Yes, I do, yeah.
That was the thing after cassettes, to all you, you know, younger listeners. He had a DAT of the first Dan Reed album, and we would play that sort of through the studio speakers, and we were just like, wow, this is incredible. You know, we were massive fans of the band. Like, every Friday night, we used to have Saturdays off from work Sundays, because Neil's thing was, well, what can you do on a Sunday? So you might as well have a Saturday off and you can go out and party. So I thought, oh, that's fair enough. So every Friday night, we'd be in the studio, finish early, and then we'd go out for a few beers. But what we'd do, I don't know, maybe 6-7 o'clock, is just sort of play a few bits of what we'd done that week or that day. And they would always end up playing the Dan Reed album, like absolutely deafening volume. And we must have been so unpopular, because we used to play it so loud, you'd be listening, and then suddenly one side of the speakers would go dull because we'd taken out one of the tweeters.
Oh, wow.
We must have done that every week. And I'm sure they weren't like, you know, a fiver. You know, they were probably fortunes. So we were probably really, really popular people. But yeah, we were massive fans of the band. And I saw, I was lucky enough to see Dan Reed at, it was the Marquee, and I was just blown away. You know, it was just such a fantastic gig. The whole audience was musicians with their jaws on the floor, kind of thing. You know?
Who was responsible for the cover that you did of Dan Reed then, Long Way To Go? That come from you, or?
It was, I think probably it might have just come from a sound check, you know, maybe just right. Steve jamming the song, really.
It's a great
version. But I would have thought, oh, it's a great song. Yeah. You know, great sentiment. So, and it was great being with the Gunn Boys. It was just a great tour, because there were no egos at all. Just everyone just got on with it. Everybody, all the crew were great, and it just really was an absolute pleasure.
How did the two tours compare then? You know, the one back in '89 and the big 3-0.
Oh, I probably didn't ache as much back in '89. They were just different, really. You know, I think we all are just like really feel so good that we're still privileged enough to be doing this. When we split up in the 90s, I thought, oh, you know, I've had a great time, but I don't think I'll be doing that again. And then after the Firefest, you know, literally it was to be one show. That's all it was.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
We just wanted to do the Firefest, try not to embarrass ourselves too much, you know. And we literally honestly thought if a couple of hundred people turn up, that's going to be a great result. Like when we sold it out, you know, 1,500 people, Nottingham Rock City, we were like, wow. And the reaction was just, yeah. It took my breath away. I mean, I'll admit now, I was at the back behind the drums and I was filling up, you know, wow. during some songs, just from the audience. You could just, it sounds cliche, but you could feel the love coming from the audience. And we came off stage, and like I say, we really didn't have any plans to go further than that one gig. We just came off, it was like, bloody hell, we better think about doing an album.
Yeah.
And that was it. And it just kind of snowballed from there. Snowballed really. From there. You know, yeah.
Okay. So that tour back in, it was 32 years ago, the original, yeah. It saw me and my best mate, Lee, we took bits of time off work, shall we say, and a bit of trouble from my part with my boss at the time. We took turns to drive each night and we attended probably 70% of the shows on that specific tour. We loved it. We were really fortunate enough to get backstage and meet you guys on numerous occasions and say hello to so many people that we met along the way. It was great to be part of it all. And you're the band I've seen the most probably in my life, about 40, 50 times. And I have so many great memories of that tour in particular. I know you just touched on you don't ache as much now, but what do you remember about the first Tough It Out tour?
I remember when we did Hammersmith Odeon, because that was my kind of home gig, you know, being a Londoner. Mm-hmm. And obviously all the, you know, press would probably come down to that and all the industry people would come down to that. So it kind of adds a little bit of pressure onto you. And I just remember being so nervous. And on that tour, we had caterers on it. And I just remember before soundcheck or just in the afternoon, you know, we were at the venue and I spent probably an hour peeling carrots backstage in the car park. It was just, I just wanted to do something. So I said to the, you know, the caterers, look, is there anything I can do? And they said, well, you can peel these carrots if you want. And I'm like, brilliant. So that's it. I sat in the, if you look at Hammersmith Odeon, there's an alleyway to the right. And up that alleyway on the right, I was peeling carrots. You know, rock and roll.
Yeah, I'm going to say it's the funny things like that that people remember the most, I suppose, sometimes.
Yeah, exactly. And also at that gig, because we'd taken out like quite a big rig, like lighting rig and everything, but in our management's wisdom or whoever's sorted it out, we can only fit the full rig in two of the gigs on the whole of the tour. So
hindsight then, yeah,
exactly. I think we had a couple of walkways at the back, kind of went over the back of the drums, and there was like a lighting truss that used to come down at an angle. Two sides had come down and Didge would stand in the middle and do his keyboard solo.
Oh, yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so I'm actually under this platform thing that Didge stood on and hear this big bass note. And then just suddenly, just this complete row started happening. Now, I think what had happened is one of Didge's cables had come out of his keyboard and it had freaked his whole rig out. And it was still going terribly wrong for the poor bloke. You know, he's good. He's got these lights. There's probably smoke and all that going on. But Didge, he just walked over, sort of reset everything, and then did the old Spock kind of, I can't do it. But
well, yeah, Spock. No, I could never do that either. I remember he used that. To do that, yeah.
Brilliant, yeah.
Yeah. So, do you miss anything about those days?
I don't know, really. I'm glad we went through what we did. I couldn't do it now. You know, I remember, you know, we used to party a lot after the gigs. And yeah. I remember just thinking you'd wake up in the morning hungover and think, oh, I'm not doing that tonight. Then you do the gig, be full of adrenaline, and off you go again. You know, it's like, bloody hell.
Yeah.
But it was really good times. It was really good times. Yeah. But then we're having really good times now. Just, you
absolutely.
Know, there's just more spinatogen involved, you know.
I was going to say, I mean, there's been so many ups in your career. There's been some downs over the years. You've lost members along the way. Like you said, you touched on splitting up before. There's also been the successful reformation. The current lineup for me is really solid and the dynamics of the five of you work really, really well. You've always, to me anyway, you've always seemed genuinely humbled by the support you receive from the fans. So what do you think the secret of FM's longevity is? Why are you still so popular after all these years? What was it that made the Firefest audience go absolutely nuts for you guys?
I don't know. I'm glad they did.
So there's the humble. You, there you are again. You're very, very humble, all five of you, really.
I don't know. It's really hard to, because to me, I'm just a normal person, you know. And it's sometimes when you do meet fans, I mean, they're so nervous, they're shaking, and it's like, why? It's me. It's Pete. You know, I'm nothing special. I'm just like, you know, I'm just like you. You know,
I would say to you, you're Pete. To me, you're that guy who signed that picture for me in 1989. Right, I was like, oh my God, it's Pete Jopp. And it was a big thing for me back then.
Well, I do know how you, because I was starstruck. I met Jeff Porcaro, the drummer from Toto.
Right.
At a trade show, and I just made the biggest dick of myself. it was so embarrassing, because I, you know, this guy was like one of my heroes, and you know, someone arranged me to meet him. And I think at the time I had a Yamaha kit. That was it. Right. And from what I knew, he was playing Yamaha as well. So that was my opening. I think I had his hand, and I said, "Oh, hello, Jeff. Lovely to meet you. I play Yamaha too." And he said, "Oh, I've just swapped to Pearl." And I couldn't think of anything to say. And I think I had hold of his hand and I wouldn't let it go. But I left the power of speech, sort of thing. And,
oh, dear.
And he just kind of excused himself. Yeah, so I do know maybe how people feel, but I'm not Jeff Porcaro.
No, no, all right.
I'm just Pete Jopp.
You're loved by many anyway. So I don't know whether you know, but at MMH, one of our DJs is Smudge, and he knows you very, very well. Yeah. And he's told me a couple of stories about you that, you know.
Oh, bloody hell.
Yeah, I won't go into them now, but I was going to ask you, what are the weird things that have happened to you while you've been on stage, you personally or with the band? He's told me one in particular, but, you know, they were quite worried about you.
You probably have to give me a clue on that one.
You were at Wyn Stanley in Wigan, and your drum riser was very, very close to the back, shall we say, and you took a tumble off the back.
Oh, right. Oh,
and
mate,
they were really worried about you.
Yeah, were they? They probably pushed me off or made it so cool. You know. I remember once, I don't think I'm a diva, but I think I might have been on the Tough Out too. I used to have this drum tech called Dink. And, right. He was a real, real character. And I remember going on stage and I was thinking, oh, did I put any deodorant on? I'm not too sure. And then it started getting in me. I'm thinking, oh, I don't want to be smelling. So I actually sent Dink back to the dressing room to get some deodorant for me. That's probably the most debris thing I've ever done, actually, you know.
Oh, dear. Right, on the first lockdown that we went into last year, you did some Q&A sessions on social media. There was yourself, Steve, did a few.
I think we all did them, but Merv forgot to save it or he deleted it.
Right, okay. You mentioned, I found it quite interesting, you mentioned the perils of the business, particularly contract issues that proved costly and very, very worrying to yourselves. Was that the biggest challenge FM ever had to endure?
That was a huge one, for sure, until it got kind of sorted out. We just owed like thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of pounds to a bank kind of thing. And no one can understand how we'd got the money, you know. I'm not really sure how much I think on the night, so I'm not sure how much I can say. But it turned out that there was some fraud involved.
Right.
And we basically got away with it. That was terrible, you know.
Yeah. Over the years, then, has your opinion of the music industry changed? And the individuals within it, shall we say?
One of our first marketed meetings when we were signed to CBS, we went into a room and met all these people. And, you know, we were, I don't know, what we were like in our mid-20s or something like that, in early 20s, not probably mid-20s, I would have thought. And one of the guys, you know, pretty high up in the marketing team, his first words to us were, "Just so you know, I bloody hate music." It's like, what? So how can he respect someone like that? It's impossible, you know.
Can you?
No, exactly. You know, we met some great people, but there are some right idiots as well. But then that's, you know, whatever job you do.
I'm going to say whatever warp of life you're in.
Yeah, you know, you're going to get some good people and you get some not so good people, you know. So it's just the same, really.
Indiscreet is 35 years old this year as well, isn't it? Right?
There's no point asking me.
So, all right then. So, song-wise then, what's the one FM song you consider to be your personal favourite? And it doesn't have to be from Tough It Out.
Wow. I really have no idea, to be honest. I like...
What do you love playing?
I can't... it's different, really. You know, because when you maybe bring a song that you haven't done for a while into the set, you look forward to playing that one. Oh, no, I'm not very good at these.
You got me next one, actually. What's the one FM song you'd love to see back in the set that doesn't often get its airing?
Oh, no. Oh, blimey. Another one of these ones. I should just pick a song, shouldn't I?
You're going to hate the last question then.
What one I'd like to bring into the set that we haven't done for a while? You know, there is talk of us doing each tour some songs we've probably never played before.
Right,
so there is kind of a list. But I'm not going to say what the list is.
Yeah,
we might not do it, you know.
Brilliant.
But, so we are going to try and, you know, bring some songs that we've actually never played before.
Very good. Very good. I was right backstage in 89. It was in Leicester, I think it was. And I remember asking Chris Overland. He was signing my program at the time, because back in them days, they did programs and everything, didn't they?
Yeah, yeah.
And they were reasonably priced as well in those days, rather than what they are now. I remember we got into a general discussion. How was the show, as you do? You know, what are your favourites? And it led me to ask him why Say It Like It Is was not in the set anymore. And he gave me this scowl, and he looked at me, and I thought, oh, right, this is the wrong question to ask. And he just turned around at me and said, I'm bored of playing it. I'm bored with it. And I just thought, that was his kind of like, I suppose. I don't want to play that song ever again in my life moment, you know, because everyone has a moment like that. Yeah.
That's quite interesting. I didn't know that.
No, I'll never forget it. Because like, the next time I met him, I was like, hello. I just said hello to him, and that was it. I thought, leave him be. What's the one FM song that you would not miss if you never played it again? Told you you'd love that one.
I can't really think. There isn't really one that I think, oh, no.
It's like asking which one's your favourite child or your least favourite child, I suppose.
Yeah, I suppose that. Yeah, I really can't think. No, there really isn't one that I think, oh, God,
that's fair enough.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's the honest truth, you know.
Good, good. Okay, what's next for FM then? When the pandemic's over, what happens next?
Well, hopefully we'll be able to get out and do some shows. You know, that's the thing we're all gagging to do.
Mm.
But it's in the lap of the gods, really, isn't it? You know, I think we've announced some shows, but later in the... Or maybe even, I don't know, maybe next year, you know, hopefully. We'll just have to see.
Is there a new album on the cards?
There will be. We have been writing, so I think there are a lot of ideas.
Good.
But we just need to get into a room and do them.
Easier said than done nowadays, isn't it?
Yeah, at the minute it is, yeah. but no, I think, that there's definitely an album plan. But it'd be nice to go out and promote Synchronized.
Yes.
I think the last rehearsal we did, we actually learned to play Synchronized. We were like, oh, it sounds amazing, this is brilliant. But then we didn't get out to play it live. That was it.
Unbelievable.
I think that was just before we were meant to be going to Australia.
Is that going to be one of the first things you do then, get back on the cars and get over to Australia?
I don't know. It's a long way to go. I'd love to have gone.
There's that song again, A Long Way to Go.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. In hindsight, it was quite lucky that we couldn't get there, because I think we would have been stuck there because the lockdown happened. A bit of divine intervention happened there, and it wasn't to be. But Merv was definitely happy, because Merv had worked out that, you know, most people would fly, you know, from here to, say, Singapore and then go to Australia. Yeah. But Merv had worked out, oh, no, if we go the other way, we can stop off in Los Angeles, then we can go up to Vegas. and then go back to LA and then fly. So that was the plan. That's what we did. so we got as far. We got as far as Las Vegas, which was great, because we shot some of the videos over there.
Yeah, because it's not a bad place to stop off at, I suppose.
No,
is it?
No, exactly. No, it's good.
It's got its plus points.
And like Merv's the king of hotels. He won't stay in a rubbish hotel, and it's his thing, booking hotels. And he had us in the Cosmo, which is like a really good hotel. And he got some ridiculously daft deal, which he always does. I don't know how he does it.
Oh, I'll have to get him to book some holidays for me and my
Missus. Exactly. Yeah, he should be a travel agent.
Right. If you could jump back in your DeLorean and go and visit the you of when you first joined FM,
right,
you say to your younger self, and what do you think your younger self would say back to you?
The old git. Probably. I'm surprised you're still alive. You know, vaguely got your marbles. I don't know. I'd say to my young self, enjoy it while you can. And I'd say we're still enjoying it. That's the thing.
You can always tell as well when you're on stage. You can always tell you're enjoying it. You're one of the bands, like I said, it's you always seem humbled by the support, but you always look like you're enjoying it, and it's a genuine look. Whereas some bands, you can see they're going through emotion.
We have a laugh. We do have a good laugh. Whatever we do. I mean, when we did the Saxon tour, I mean, we had like a week to organise it when Dave hurt his back. Mm-hmm. We literally had a week to organise, you know, a 4-week European tour. And it was, I don't know how the hell we did it, but and the budget was really tight. So, you know, we couldn't afford crew and we had this splitter bus, but we just got on with it. But we had such a brilliant time. You know, we were setting our own gear up. We were like taking the gear off after we'd finished with, you know, packing it away, then getting in the van and then driving 4 or 5 hours. But we had such a great laugh.
It's like the old times.
It was brilliant, you know, and I'm thinking, I'm nearly bloody well. I would have been like nearly 60. I'm thinking, this is brilliant, you know. And I did most of the driving on that because I don't mind driving. And it's just like hearing all the banter in the back. Yeah. It was great.
Who's the favourite? Who's your? I was going to say, if I was asking Merv this, it'd have to be Romeo's daughter. But I'm going to say, who's the favourite band that you've worked with? You've had on stage with? You've shared the stage? Because there's been so many, hasn't there? Really?
Yeah, I mean, back in the day, the Bon Jovi tour was brilliant.
Yeah,
because that really did take us up another level. They've all been good for different reasons. Like I say, the Saxon tour.
Yeah,
that was great fun. You know, to be when we went out with Journey and Foreigner, that was after we'd reformed. I just remember standing on the stage thinking, bloody hell, we're out. We're on tour with Journey and Foreigner. This is like amazing, you know. And actually the Foreigner tour that we did on their headline tour, that was a great tour. But they were a lovely, lovely bunch of people. We've only had one band that we had problems with, kind of thing, and that in all the bands we've ever opened for, kind of thing. So I'll let you make your own conclusions of that.
I remember the support bands that you've had before the years. One of the first times I ever saw you was at Manchester International. You had an American band called White Sister support you. And they were late and they came on and they did 5 songs. Because they were that late, and me and my mates looked at each other and went, this is going to be a great night. It's just they set the stage. I think it was because it was like they came on, they did the stuff, and it was like wow, where did that come from?
I think they were one of our most popular opening acts. You know, people talk about that. I remember a couple of the gigs on that tour, they blew us off stage. You know, it was like, bloody hell, we'll get rid of this lot. You know, it's no good. We can't be having this. But we had some good. We had Soraya.
Yeah.
On some shows.
Seen you a few times with them as well.
Yeah. You know, we always try and get decent acts to open for us, you know, or a good package.
Yeah.
Kind of thing, you know, because when we've been on, you know, since we got back, going out with Dare has been great, you know, and then, like I say, we then did the Dan Reed Gun.
You're very, very good at finding bands that complement you on the tour. Like you said, a package. I've always found that you've been really, really good at complementing the way you play and getting a support band that suits your styles as well.
Yeah, I mean, like I say, we just try and find bands that we think our audience will like, you know, but also a band that has their own audience as well, you know. So, some thought does go into it, you know.
Right, Pete Jupp of the Mighty FM, thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure. Good luck with the album. Regards to all the guys, and hopefully we'll see you on the road very, very soon.
Yeah, well, let's hope, you know.
Thank you very much.
Have your jab and stay safe. Take care.
MMH, the home of rock radio.